For years, I've sounded like a broken record.
I do not want kids.
I do not ever want to have kids.
I don't want to have a kid. Don't want to have a kid. Don't want to have a kid.
I'm in my 40s now. The door is almost closed. And suddenly, I'm not so sure.
The story has always been no. I'm just wondering to what degree it's just a story.
From CBC's Personally, this is Creation Myth. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
So it wasn't until college that I was in therapy for the first time, and I did not do it because I thought I needed help. I did it because I knew I wanted to do this for other people, and I just wanted to see. I was going to become a therapist. I took every clinical internship, every psychology course, but then I got to the end of it, and I was like, ooh, I should not help anyone. And I think it took me a long time to appreciate that some suffering isn't as obvious, including my own, and that it's still valid and worthy of care.
I think that's what I thought therapy was, is just making hard stuff go away. But then...
the internet loves throwing around words like gaslighting, narcissist, and toxic, but most of the time, they're getting it wrong. In this podcast, we unpack the internet's most asked anonymous mental health questions that you wish you could ask a therapist. And by anonymous, we mean the Reddit questions you post in the middle of the night. If you're new here, welcome. I'm Felicia Keller Boyle, licensed somatic therapist and clinical advisor at besttherapist.com.
And I'm Christy Plantinga, founder of Best Therapists, and I've been in a lot of therapy. This show is brought to you by besttherapist.com. A therapist directory that vets therapists so you can focus on fit, not quality. You can find your best therapist at besttherapist.com. It's time to find out what therapists are really thinking.
Today we have a really special episode for you. Christy and I are going to help you get to know us a little bit better and share some of our own mental health journeys and really what inspired us to create this podcast. So I don't know about you, Christy, but I'm a little nervous. I'm a little excited. I think it's going to be cool to let people, you know, get a bit more of a window into who we are because they might be wondering. I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? I'm a therapist. You've been in a lot of therapy. Why we would start what your therapist thinks. There's more to the story. And so today we're going to be sharing a bit of that. And yeah, it's both a little nerve-wracking and excited. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I think the same way. One of the best things I think we all can do as people who are passionate about mental health is break the stigma of silence around mental health, and that there is no shame in having struggles with mental health. You know, we'll get into it, but we both have definitely struggled with our mental health.
For sure.
And of course, it's always scary to put your story out there because there are going to always be people who are judgmental. It's one of those things that's tough to understand if you haven't been there. But I think it's really, really important to be more open about this stuff. Yeah, hopefully someone listening feels more encouraged to share what they're going through with other people. And the more people that can break the stigma, the better. I always think if more people got therapy, the world would be so much better.
I couldn't agree more. So, Christy, what got you interested in mental health?
Yeah, I think, and I've heard this from many other therapists that I work with. I work with many, many therapists in the different businesses that I have. I'm obsessed with therapists. I love therapists. I love that I get to hang out with them all the time. But I was very much in the kind of sensitive kid, good listener to therapist pipeline, which is very commonly
under. And you yet somehow escaped.
And I somehow escaped, which is great because it's really not the career for me. I love supporting therapists. It means the world to me. But yeah, so I think I was a really sensitive kid. Like I always had big feelings, right? Just big feelings as a kid. And I specifically remember this one time, like I was pretty young, probably middle school, and I was just like journaling, like being all moody and sad, looking out like this dark fall day. And, you know, I just had all these.
And you grew up in Michigan, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to like paint the picture of like the scenery.
Yes. Yeah.
Very cold.
Wet leaves sticking onto the sewers. And I was like, they get it.
You know, just the leaves?
Yeah. I was like, that's how I feel, you know? Like, that's me. So I think I was always just this kind of older soul sensitive kind of kid. So I think in some ways I was maybe set up for things like depression because I was just kind of more comfortable with those feelings. Not that anyone obviously chooses to feel depressed because it's terrible. but I just became more interested in and interested in it as my life unfolded, as more things began to aggravate my mental health problems. And I think when you're encouraged, it's like you're a good listener. It's like, well, what else would I be than a professional listener, which is kind of what people think therapy is a lot of times. So I was going to become a therapist. I took like every clinical internship, every psychology course in college, but then I got to the end of it and I was like, ooh, I should not help anyone. Like, that is not a good idea for me right now. And I thought maybe I would in the future. Who knows? Maybe I will at some point if I ever...
There's still time.
There's still time. Life is long. But yeah, I just decided that it wasn't for me in a professional way, but I never lost the passion. I never forgot how therapists changed my life. And so I kind of got to segue back into the mental health world using other skills that I had. So it all started, I think, big feelings kid.
Way back when.
And yeah, that was at least what got me interested. And I think just paying attention to my mental health.
How old were you when you first got into therapy? Like, when did your therapy client journey begin?
I was 19 when I went to my first therapy session. I've seen a handful of therapists over the years, and they all, I think, taught me different things, which has been cool. I definitely have my preferences, I think, of the therapists that changed my life the most. But I think I should have been in therapy much sooner. And to your point, when you were referring to if I'd got treatment sooner, I feel that way about my own mental health journey. I just wish that I got help sooner, because I don't think it would have gotten as bad as it did if I got help before it got to that point.
Yeah, that makes me think about one of the reasons that I was drawn to the mental health world. I was just really aware from a super young age of a lot of things that aren't good. I'm the oldest of two kids raised by a single parent. My dad really wasn't around when I was growing up. And there were, yeah, just like a lot of people in my life who were really suffering, including myself, but just not in as obvious a way.
But you were saying how your struggle's more internal than the people in your life where maybe it was more obvious.
Exactly. So there were lots of people in my life who had struggles that were like pretty obvious, you know, and mine were serious, but just less obvious because I was very, quote unquote, functional. You know, I was getting good grades. I was not getting in trouble at school. It took me quite a long time to like really make friends. I was very much a loner, especially when I was very young. And definitely relate to what you said about being an old soul. Like, I felt very comfortable speaking to adults or like being in a leadership position. But if the thing I needed to do was play with other children or just, yeah, I could play by myself. But if I needed to play with other kids, I was just very kind of like confused about how to do that. And so I spent a lot of time when I was young just like by myself or in teachers' classrooms. And it really wasn't until like junior high in choir class where I met some friends and I kind of got into this group of people that I'm still friends with today.
I love that.
I know. And I love these people so much. We're basically family. Like, these are my group of friends that I've known now for, yeah, the majority of my life. We're still going strong. And yeah, but before that, I was really kind of on my own. And even after I started, I don't know, feeling a little bit more at ease with people my age, I still didn't really talk to them about what was going on. You know, I still kept a lot of that to myself. I was so focused on the other people in my life that seemed like they needed help.
That's what I was going to say. This sounds like a classic, I'm the one that's doing okay, so I'm going to shoulder
100%
this chaos because I'm the one that kind of has it together when inside there is actually just as much chaos, but you are the responsible one who felt responsible for the people around you.
Exactly. And so when you're talking about that, like, you know, deeply sensitive, you know, old soul to therapist pipeline, I absolutely fit that bill. Again, wasn't so great at talking to peers, but if they needed something or if they were hurting or if they were trying to figure something out, I was like the best person to talk to, you know, because I could really help them figure it out. I could be, you know, a compassionate listener. And I really, really, really cared about people feeling better. And I was also like, had this drive to help people earlier in their lives. So like before I became a therapist, I was really interested in working with younger people, working with children, because I thought, well, how do we reduce suffering? We work with people as soon as possible so that, you know, like you're saying, early intervention.
Timeliness of treatment.
Timeliness of treatment. Like if we can help people when they're younger, then we could potentially prevent even more suffering. And ultimately, I didn't work with children that much, but that was kind of my initial interest when I was first starting out in the field or when I was first considering being a therapist.
You know, just a healer's soul, which I think is what draws so many therapists to the field, is they just genuinely have this beautiful heart that
right.
they want to make people feel better because life is really hard and the world
life
can be
really
sad.
Yeah, and I think over the years, I've really come to appreciate the fact that suffering is something that everyone experiences, you know, regardless of what it might look like. People who are very well-resourced still experience suffering. People who are very under-resourced still experience suffering. And I think it took me a long time to appreciate that some suffering isn't as obvious, including my own, and that it's still valid and worthy of care. So yeah, that's been a big part of my own journey. And I'm happy to say, like, eventually I like have started to take care of my own mental health, right? Like it took a while for me to feel like it was okay to turn the spotlight back on myself.
I was gonna say, did you decide to help others or yourself first, like when you were deciding to pursue this as a profession?
Well, I was 13 when I decided to be a therapist. So
amazing.
I definitely was more concerned with helping other people than myself, you know. But yeah, I mean, definitely eventually I did start getting help. Christy, what are some of the things that have affected your mental health?
I call it a proclivity for the sads. This is what I refer to it a lot.
That's
I think.
So poetic.
Yeah.
That's very writerly
to the
of you.
Sads, you know, which I think maybe a lot of listeners have, you know. I think I was never afraid of the deeper things. I was never afraid of hard conversations. Like, I've never understood why people, you know, don't ask other people who have just like lost a relative or a parent or like a pet, like, how are you doing? So like, I don't want to bring it up, you know, like I don't want to upset them. But from my experience, I'm not afraid of asking those kinds of things to people because I'm not afraid if they'll get, you know, a little sad or emotional. But also it's so much better to be asked than to not be asked at all, you know? So I was always just really more comfortable in that space. So I think I was predisposed. Right. When it's like nature versus nurture, I was predisposed to struggle with my mental health. And then in high school, I was diagnosed with a chronic condition that runs in my family. And I felt very alone with it. I think I needed more help than I got because everyone just does the best with what they have at the time. You know, it's when you just aren't expecting something and you don't know the best thing forward. I think that's where I got caught a bit. And so I kind of just buried it and, you know, just did what I needed to from a medical perspective, but didn't really, you know, how am I going to deal with this throughout my life? Because it's a chronic condition. It never goes away, right?
That must have been scary to get that news as a young person, I imagine.
Yeah, I think I was diagnosed at 13. And so you're just this
wow.
chaotic teenage girl, you know, who, and all you want as a teenager is just to be understood because you don't understand yourself and you want to kind of learn who am I, right? So this really this core thing to who I was, I had no idea what to do with, and I wasn't telling, you know, friends or really anyone at the time. It was kept very close in my family for many reasons, but that kind of bit me in the ass because I just kept it so close to myself that I think, I was 19 and in college, my mental health just like evaporated. It just, I remember the morning, it was like depression sat in and I was like in a deep depression for a while. And then I just had no choice but to deal with it. It felt so terrible. Like depression is truly one of the absolute worst things I think a person can experience. And I just knew I didn't want to feel that way anymore. I wanted that vivacity for life. I think vivacity is a word, right?
If it wasn't, it is now.
Yeah, and it should be. So
Shakespeare.
Basically.
So how'd you find a therapist? Like, what was the process you went through as a 19-year-old? Did you get your parents involved? Did you go to your school counseling center? Did you look a therapist up on the internet? Like, how'd you find your therapist?
Yeah, this was 2012. I mean, I certainly was not savvy at all. But I think first my parents swooped in and they were like, we are going to get you help. And I remember my godmother, whom I love so much, she's a psychologist and she actually taught psychology at the college that I went to for a while. And so she knew one of the school counselors there. So my first session ever was in, like a school counseling setting. And I remember I barely sat down to the chair and I was like, oh, just like melted immediately. And just remember Therese being like, so you have depression.
They've
away.
Like literally done no diagnosis. No, use no other diagnosis other than the fact that your butt touched the therapy couch and you immediately
started crying. Half my butt was on the chair and he was like, yeah, girl, you have depression. And it was so weird to feel that. And again, he did his due diligence, whatever. I'm not
saying
he was bad.
Yeah,
no,
I'm sure he did what he was supposed to do.
But he sees this poor
but it was
girl.
Obvious.
It was obvious, right? Yeah. So, and just to get that diagnosis, I remember I was just racking with it in my brain. I just couldn't get my mind around it that I was a person who had depression. I just remember that process being very difficult. But so are you saying it felt hard to get that diagnosis? When you got it, was challenging to receive the diagnosis, or when you got it you're like, oh, this makes sense?
What do you mean?
I think it's both. On one hand, it was very empowering because I felt, not quote unquote crazy. There is something wrong. There's something going on. You're not just this dramatic, sensitive person, whatever, which I think you get told a lot when you are kind of a big feelings person, oh, you're dramatic, or people don't take you seriously sometimes. So then to get that diagnosis, it made me feel more confident in a way that, okay, I know I have this, but also there's so much stigma around depression. And when I was even younger, more so for my, our parents' generation, even more so. So I think getting the diagnosis was the first time I really felt stigmatized in my life. I just experienced a lot of privilege and I never really thought that. And I don't think the school that I went to was very sympathetic about mental health problems, because mental health problems don't always unfold in this pretty way, right? So I went to a very Christian school and, I was getting into risky behavior. I was drinking. It didn't unfold in this sad, kind of poetic way.
You weren't just writing poetry about wet leaves on sewer grates.
I had passed my artistic phase with mental health. You know what I mean? I was a fucking mess, to be honest. Yeah. I was a total mess. And that's really easy to judge on the outside, especially just when you're younger and you just don't know that as much about people in the world. And I think ideally we gain an understanding of people and more forgiveness for people as we get older, instead of oh, if I were you, I would never do that, because you might be the person
so
who does
easy
do
to
that.
Say.
Yeah.
So, right. Exactly.
That's when I first really started the deep dive into my mental health journey. Anxiety definitely came with that. That took me a lot longer to recover from. And I still, who doesn't have, periods of time where their anxiety kicks up again. What about you? Yeah. What are some of the things that affected your mental health?
Yeah. I mean, what hasn't, right? Well, everything I said already about just being kind of a loner as a kid, there were some pretty like serious challenges that happened really early in my life that kind of, yeah, made me like quite nervous of other people, the world. I was just very sad. I was such a sad kid. I was also quite an angry kid too. That definitely came out more at home, maybe not so much like with my peers or teachers or anything like that. But yeah, like I was pretty unhappy in a lot of ways. I think that was just my norm from such an early age. You know, it wasn't like things were good and then they like started unraveling. It's kind of like things were pretty rough from almost the very beginning. So it was more like finally getting to a point where I was like, oh, I should do something about this. You know what I mean? Like you, my first counseling experience was also in college. So like I said, at age 13, I decided I wanted to be a therapist. But that wasn't because I had experiences in therapy. Like, I know I had some family members who had maybe had brief therapy or were in group therapy at different points, but I don't think I was ever in therapy as like a young person. I definitely needed it, but I wasn't in it. Or if I was, maybe it was like a session here or there. Like, I literally don't even remember. It might have been like sitting in on someone else's therapy in my family to kind of like be a part of that family therapy, but I don't think I ever had my own. So it wasn't until college that I was in therapy for the first time, and I was very practical about it. I didn't go in because I was like, I need help. I went in because there's free therapy, and I know I want to be a therapist. So like, just for research sake,
it's a case study, you know,
go be in therapy to like see what this is actually
asking
like
for a
to
friend.
Receive. Yeah, I'm totally asking for a friend. Absolutely. I did not do it because I thought I needed help. I did it because I knew I wanted to do this for other people, and I just wanted to see.
What are you doing? Do you see him?
He's just like under the couch.
Oh my God.
But despite the fact that I was going for research purposes only, when I got there, I, like you, just immediately started crying.
Yeah, and one ass cheek on the chair. And it's like, oh, I need help.
Turns out I'm not just here for research. But yeah, I mean, there's not a lot that I remember about the therapy except for the fact that I just talked and cried the whole time. But I do remember one thing that my therapist said that has stayed with me since that time. And it had a huge impact. I remember I was talking about something from early in my childhood that was really sad. And I was just saying, I'm so sick of feeling sad about this. I'm so done of being bothered by this, thinking about this. I just don't understand basically why I'm not over this, you know? And my therapist said something like, well, Felicia, what happened was it's really sad, you know? And it's probably going to be sad for the rest of your life. That's not going to stop having been a sad thing. And what if instead of trying to feel like you need to stop having feelings about it, you just made it okay to feel sad? And you could even like, I don't think they said it this way, but I feel like they might have suggested like, you can even decide that once a year you're going to let yourself do it or you're going to like create some sort of ritual around it. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. I'm not broken because this still affects me because I still have feelings about this truly terrible thing. Like that's not a bad thing to have feelings about it. So that was really helpful.
Felicia, what's your favorite place on earth?
That's a tough one. It's a toss-up between a fancy pants hotel or camping in the great outdoors.
Well, my favorite place on earth is bed. That's why I'm thrilled to share more about our sponsor for this episode, Cozy Earth.
Have you tried their sheets yet?
Oh my God, yes. The morning after I put them on the bed, my husband turns to me wide-eyed and goes, "These are so soft."
Like, unreasonably soft.
I'm also obsessed with their classic cuddle blanket. It's plush, also ridiculously soft, and weighted.
I love being outside, but I also love my fancy indoor comforts, and the bamboo pajama set is the ultimate sleepwear upgrade. They're so cozy, but they actually sleep cooler than cotton, so I don't get too hot at night.
Believe it or not, this is actually our second pair of matching pajama sets. You're actually the one who introduced me.
Aw, I love that for us.
So whether you're looking to give yourself a little extra love and care this season,
or gift something high quality and indulgent to a loved one,
try Cozy Earth. With a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty on their products.
Use our promo code WYTT for up to 20% off at CozyEarth.com.
It's so interesting how you were so quick to see the suffering in others and yet so the slow irony. To admit if for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a thing that a lot of therapists experience. I think there's probably a lot of overlap between like older siblings and therapists. I think there's probably a lot of overlap between like the being the person in the family who kind of quote unquote has it together. Again, like not that you necessarily have it together, because I certainly didn't, but you have the appearance of having it together, right? I think there's probably a lot of overlap in those groups. And I was quite slow to really recognize that I needed help and to be willing to accept it. Because I used to be like really, really like put off when people would express, like I perceived it as pity, but maybe it was just compassion or care. But I really, really did not like it when people would try to be nice to me in that way. When it was clear to me that they noticed something that was like maybe a little off and they would be like, hey, are you all right? And I'd be like, I'm fine. I would just straight up like lie to people when they would be like, are you okay? I'd be like, yeah, I don't have allergies. I would say, or maybe I do now, but I would be like, I have allergies. It's like, okay, because you look like you're crying and we're just like walking through the halls in high school. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm like I'm totally fine.
Totally fine. So that's on you.
How dare you even suggest that? Like,
tears actively streaming down your face. Be like, it sounds like oh a you God. Thing. It's not me.
I'm like basically crying now just thinking about it. It's that ridiculous. Yeah. It's so ridiculous.
I'll say this. Choosing to be the person that had to be okay, I absolutely prioritized other people's feelings above my own because, yeah, you just don't want to see people feel hurt. I don't want to bring this up because that might hurt this person's feelings. So I think I'm sure a lot of therapists, and obviously I know for me, again, choosing to be the person that I'm going to be the one that's okay. I'm going to make sure other people feel better before me because their feelings matter more than mine at the end of the day is really what we're doing.
Or there's just like no room. Sometimes it feels like there's no room, you know, when there's only so many resources to go around, when there's only so much attention or time or money or fucks to go around. It's someone is suffering again in a way that is much more obvious or much more acute, maybe dangerous. You know, it makes sense that the time, money, energy, resources, including your own, would go towards that person. But it doesn't mean that you might not be struggling in your own way. And for me, like changing environments, going to college, leaving home, being in a place where I could put more attention on myself was kind of the beginning of things starting to change.
Yeah. How did your mental health journey unfold after that initial kind of, oh, I'm not okay and I should maybe keep pursuing this not as a case study?
Funnily enough, like I didn't continue therapy. Like, you know, I graduated or like that one free semester in school ended. And so I stopped going. Now I know what it's like to see a therapist work. And I know what it's like to be on the other side of that. A lot of my mental health healing has actually happened outside of therapy. It's happened a lot through engaging in somatic practices, having a meditation practice. It's happened through recovery. I don't deal with substance addiction myself. I never have, hopefully never will. But like I said, I have a lot of loved ones who deal with addiction. So at different points in my life, I've been sometimes more, sometimes less involved with Al-Anon. Yeah, so it's kind of funny as a therapist, you know, to like be a therapist and really love it and really value it and think like it's, you know, incredibly life-changing for people, but to have actually had a lot of my healing happen outside of that context. Now, these days, I am in therapy and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm at the point in my life where I'm like really ready to receive that. But yeah, so a lot of my mental health shifts came through somatic practices or recovery or meditation groups that I was a part of. Like I found a lot of healing through that and then occasionally supplemented by therapy. But yeah, I think for me, groups are just so powerful. I think something that was true for me growing up was just like really strong sense of isolation and specialness, but not in a good way, you know? And so I'm really so grateful to have been in different groups that really confront the beliefs that I've had around being special in ways that aren't helpful, you know, and hearing other people describe experiences that are so similar to mine. And really, it's hard to walk out of those rooms still in the fantasy that, like, my problems are really unique or they're insurmountable. It's just so nice to be around other humans who are able to say, yeah, me too. You know, I feel that too. Even if our stories aren't exactly the same, just knowing that I'm actually not alone in these things has been such a huge part of the healing. And then the other piece is, yeah, like getting into my body. Growing up, I was really, really disconnected from my body. I was super heady, super thinky, wanted to do really well in school, and I didn't really feel connected to my body. I was also raised in a very conservative church. And so, like, the body was just kind of like this dangerous place. You're not supposed to go there. Like, that's where sinful desires live. So I was very much, like, cut off from my body, very much prized, like, being smart and being good at school. So it really wasn't until my, like, young adulthood that I started reconnecting with my body, being curious about it, literally just, like, moving my body instead of just thinking all the time. And that has been so helpful. And it's a huge part of how I became a somatic therapist, because I did experience that sort of healing in my body first, and then I started using it with clients.
I can totally see that. And I would love to do more somatic work in my therapy journey as it continues to fold. Also currently in therapy, shout out Alicia, you are the best and you've changed my life. Yeah, I think what was interesting about continuing and seeing different therapists, which I always recommend, you know, try out different therapists. It's good to see who you have more of a connection with, what approach resounds with you more, and it could change throughout your life too.
I was just gonna say that. Yeah. Like, there was a period of time in my life where I hired a male therapist on purpose because I really wanted my transference about men and my feelings about men to get evoked in that therapy. And oddly enough, it didn't end up being like a big deal, but I intentionally did that. And this round of therapy, I intentionally looked for a therapist who provided EMDR therapy, which is a treatment that's often used for trauma, because I knew I wanted to do some work around that. And it was also really important to me to find a therapist who did in-person work, because I really wanted to do work in person. And so, yeah, I've chosen different therapists for, like, different stages of my life.
Because every therapist is an individual. So you're obviously learning from all of their education and their clinical skills, but also just them as people. And totally. I think that's so valuable too, that different therapists can empathize deeply with different parts of your experience, but they might not be able to empathize with other parts. You know,
that's,
I mean,
so
obviously
true.
Empathy is the bread and butter of therapists. It's who they are. But obviously there are going to be some things, if you haven't gone through it, you're not going to get it as much.
And how you feel just about different people. You know what I mean? I'm so aware, having worked as a therapist, that, like, the relationship between you and the therapist is just so valuable. All of the things that you feel about your therapist, the things you like about them, the things that frustrate you about them, how they respond to you when you're really liking them or you're really frustrated with them, can be, like, super evocative and helpful in the therapy. So again, like, for me, it was important at one point in time to work with somebody who I thought might actually be activating for me, because I wanted to explore that in a container that would be safe, you know, and I'm assuming this person is going to be safe and it's a place where my stuff could come up and it would be supported.
Yeah, I think there's so much healing that we can do individually, especially when we're thinking about just outside of the therapy room or even in therapy. That's a very individual, often healing experience, but some of the most profound moments in my own healing journey have been in relationship. You know,
yeah,
like through my relationship with my husband, so much was just healed with him that I knew I wouldn't be able to do by myself, because you need to kind of break whatever pattern that you're in and then learn that that's not how all relationships have to be, or that's not true, or, you know, just, I think in relationship, you know, it's so funny that this is a podcast, like, largely about therapy, but then so much healing does happen outside of therapy, like you were saying, you know, and I know you're a very spiritual person.
Yeah.
And that's been a really huge part of you just maintaining your own wellness and really exploring yourself. And what's interesting is I never really thought of myself as a spiritual person, but with my therapist, I learned that really what needed to be healed was my spirit. And it wasn't me like thinking through all this stuff, which you need to do. You need to talk it out, right? But what I really needed was this kind of deeper just cultivating of my inner wisdom and like letting my spirit trusting yourself, like believing, like learning that I can have beliefs. Because yeah, I was raised in a religious context, so belief was always tied to like organized religion and faith. And then it's like I can have beliefs and I can just choose to believe stuff because I want to.
Yes.
Like I can choose to believe that reincarnation is real. That doesn't hurt anyone. And if I want to have that as a belief, I can have that. So I think reclaiming that was a really, really big part of my own healing journey. And I'm not someone who currently, you know, meditates, or I think I'm probably more spiritual than most person, but I know a lot of like, you know, well, like really spiritual people.
I think it's hard also when you come from the sort of backgrounds that you and I came from. Because I know for me, when I stopped being a Christian, when I left the church, it took years for me to even understand that spirituality was something that wasn't synonymous with Christianity. I like felt a real repulsion actually towards anything that was spiritual or I perceived as spiritual. And so it took quite a long time for me to be like, no, I get to have spirituality, even if it's not the way I thought about it when I was younger.
And I want to say, too, for listeners who are religious and exploring their relationship with religion, you know, religion can be a very healing place for a lot of people. So it wasn't for Felicia and I, but I even did a paper on this at college that people in religious communities had better outcomes for, like, cancer was a study that I read. I'm not saying that's, like, listen, you know, that is truth and go
that
tell
was one
everyone.
Study. We don't know if it's been replicated multiple times. But yeah, there are tons of great things about spiritual communities. And I think what has been so important to me is being able to choose that, because I was born into it. And so were you. We were both born into the religions that we were a part of. And I know I certainly at a certain age chose it, like with the, you know, capacities that I had at the time, I chose to be a part of that religion. But in many ways, it was something that was just a part of my life from the very beginning. And so what's so different now is having that choice. And like you said about being able to choose beliefs that help you in your life and don't harm others. You know, what are the beliefs that I am going to live by because they're not coming from a kind of dogma outside of me? What are the things that I really want to hold true and live by? And also that can change. You know, I think that's one of the other hard things about coming out of, you know, the ways that you and I were in religions. It's like, it's very much like it's this way and that's the only right way. But I think one of the biggest mental health breakthroughs that I've had throughout my life has been accepting that it's okay for me to change. You know, I always really wanted to get it right. I wanted to be a good kid. I wanted to be a good person. I wanted to always do the right thing. And one thing that's been so important for me in feeling a sense of freedom in my life and choice in my life is that, one, I can make mistakes. I can change my mind. I can think or believe something at one point and then learn new information and change my beliefs. And sometimes that means I've learned information and I'm like, ooh, I messed up. I need to make amends for that. Or it might be like, that just doesn't seem true anymore based on like the new things that I know. And I'm allowed to just think and believe differently. And that freedom is so healing. That is so incredibly healing.
There's so often a fear of making mistakes in relationships. I know that I had that. I was so afraid if I mess this up, if I say the wrong thing, if I stand up for myself, if I say, hey, I don't like that, or hey, I don't want to hang out tonight, or whatever. Being so scared that the relationship is just going to disappear and they're going to hate me. We talk about people pleasing a lot on the show because Felicia and I may or may not have struggled with that in our lives. But I think that's a lot of people pleasing. And yeah, I'll just never forget I had this moment in therapy where I think we've talked about this maybe on the episode about emotional abuse with Ashley Hudson, but that you can be the bad guy and you can make mistakes. And sometimes people are just going to think that you're the bad guy because you hurt them, even though you know, you were doing your best that you could at the time. So that same grace that you extend to other people in your life, you know, yeah. Oh, this person could mess up and I still loved them. But then not letting yourself do that, loving yourself despite messing up. I think that kind of forgiveness and that self-talk is something that I mastered, because I almost have like my therapist. She's like the angel on my shoulder, you know, where it's like you're going through your day and you're facing a tough situation, whatever. I can like hear my therapist just being like, hey, you know, like, I don't know, just like that inner voice, cultivating that inner voice in therapy, that is so valuable.
Absolutely. That is such an important shift. And I think not having that in practice is one of the ways that our suffering can be so intractable, because fundamentally that's not accepting yourself. That's saying my love for myself is conditional upon always getting it right. And if there's a moment where I don't get it right, getting it right can be like so broad, right? It might not even be like you actually did anything wrong. It might just be like you were a little weird and awkward. And so yeah. Now your brain is like, fuck you. I hate you. Like, how you dare you? Like, you can't have friends anymore. Yeah. That was so easy, to your point earlier about, like, you know, it can be so easy to offer people compassion and then have such a hard time doing it for yourself. It was so easy for me to see that other people were worthy of like love and compassion and that they deserve to have like better lives. Like, of course, they shouldn't continue to suffer just because they did something wrong once or maybe even a lot, you know, but it was a lot harder to apply that to myself because you're brain that has the habits it has, right? And if it has the habit of really beating you up, it's not just as simple as like, hey, don't do that. It's literally a process of rewiring your patterns. That's where somatic practices and things like meditation really came in. That's why they were so helpful, is because neither of those things are about thinking my way out of it. They're really about, how do I regulate my system even while hard things are happening in my brain?
I think that's what I thought therapy was, is just making hard stuff go away. But then life continues to be hard. Like, even since having my son, you know, speaking of that self-forgiveness piece, where usually when you're in like a good place and nothing is particularly traumatizing or anything, you can catch yourself and say, oh, I don't think that way anymore. I don't treat myself like that anymore. But I remember, like, I was trying to get some clothes off of him and the zipper kind of like scratched his forehead. And I had him like 3 weeks ago, so I was like unstable a little bit, but I was inconsolable. I was like, oh my God, look at this mark on my baby's forehead. I cannot. And it went away like an hour later. Right. Yeah. And then if my friend texted me that, I would say, what are you doing? Like, they're okay. It doesn't matter. He doesn't remember what happened 30 seconds ago. Like, he'll be okay. But that's also what therapy does, is it gives you those tools to catch yourself.
Yes.
When life continues to be traumatizing, so you don't have to keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again, which I think is frustrating when you are a person who has been in a lot of therapy and then you have, you know, relationships with people who haven't. You keep seeing them do the same thing and you're like, oh God, that's so frustrating, because I know that it could be different for you, better for you. But that's part of, you know, a healing journey too, is just accepting people. You know, for yourself, accepting yourself, but also accepting others as they are too. So we've both been on our own mental health journeys. This is your profession. Therapists are the people that I love to support in my own work. So in many ways, it feels very natural for us to want to start a mental health podcast. And I think I remember when we actually started talking more seriously about it, because we always thought, like, oh, it'd be so fun to do a podcast together.
Yeah, we talked about it for like months, maybe even like a year before it actually started. We had been talking about it, and then like so many things were happening. It's like, I was very busy in my business. You were very busy in your business. You got pregnant, right?
Yeah.
All of these. I traveled for like a month.
You were
like
gone for a long time. Having so much fun, but you were gone for a while.
I traveled like, a lot. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, so many things just kind of delayed it, but we also really wanted to make sure that we were contributing something we felt excited about. And there were some things that were really important to us in creating the podcast. We knew that we wanted to handle like serious mental health topics, but we also knew we wanted it to be fun, which is like not always an easy thing to do, right? Like, One of the reasons why you and I enjoy talking with each other so much is because we have a lot of fun and we joke around a lot.
Yeah, the dark sense of humor suits mental health topics very well.
Totally. Totally. And so we knew we wanted to have something that would feel like entertaining and fun and funny, but also when the time called for it, that we could get serious. And we really wanted to be respectful about the topics that we were handling. So that was something we really wanted to get right about this show. And I feel really good about how we've done it so far.
Yeah, me too. And I think, you know, it goes back to what we were saying in the beginning about how we feel even recording this certainly more vulnerable episode. But it's just another one of those things that can break stigma, is just being a little more lighthearted when it's appropriate to talk about some of this stuff. Because, yeah, I think most of us are just afraid of hard things, and we're afraid of talking about difficult things. But the reality is that they're part of life frequently. And so being able to bring a bit more, I think, levity and relatability is important to me.
You talked about that a lot. I'm remembering, because you said, you know, as somebody who's not a therapist, right, as somebody who is a therapy goer, you really helped me understand that therapy can feel kind of mysterious in this way, you know, especially what the therapist is actually thinking, like hence the title of our show. But as someone who has benefited so much from mental health care, I remember you sharing with me that you really wanted to get this information out to more people. Like, that was something that was really important to you about starting the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all at one point or another, hopefully, we kind of start dipping our toes into the world of mental health. And I think of a podcast as just a great place to start. I just love listening to therapists and hearing from them. But we really liked that there was a professional, always professionals, licensed mental health professionals, but also someone who could kind of raise their hand and be like, well, what does that mean?
Yeah, you know? we need our everyman.
Yeah, I'm the everyman. I'm the everyman for the podcast. But we spent so long just really workshopping what do we want this to be. And I'm just so happy with all the conversations we've had so far. I've learned so much from all of our experts, anyone who's curious about mental health and thinks the world of psychology is really interesting. This is, you know, a great fit for that as well. But yeah, ideally, I think it would make me so happy to know that this did shape someone's like mental health journey, or I can relate to that, or maybe I will start to look for a therapist this weekend, even though I've been saying I'll do it for 3 years, you know, just anything like that. That feels really special to me, because we both know that we would have probably had better outcomes if we got help sooner. So if 100%. This could inspire anyone to get help sooner, shout out besttherapist.com, where we vet therapists. So you have to do a little less work maybe in the qualification process. If even one person feels encouraged enough to find a therapist,
mission accomplished. Job well done. Yeah.
Yeah. Job well done. Well, with that, thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you got to the end, it's a little scary to put out there in the world, but at the same time, I'm not ashamed of what I've been through.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so with you. Like, all we've done is be honest here about ourselves and our lives. And we thank you for your kind attention. We hope that something that we shared resonated with you. And like Christy said, if you're looking for a therapist, please do check out besttherapist.com. Leave comments on our show. Ask us your questions. Follow us on Instagram. I've been reading some of the DMs that we've gotten there. And yeah, wow. Like, so many amazing responses. Someone wrote me and said that they were writing a book about one of the topics that we covered, and they really enjoyed how we spoke about it. So that was really neat. I really love hearing from you all. So please do keep on writing in, commenting on the show, sharing it with your friends.
And letting us know what sorts of topics would you like us to bring an expert to speak about. We have a ton of super fun ones lined up for
right,
season 2 already.
Season 2 is coming.
Season 2 is coming. We have some baller guests. I'm so excited to talk to them, just
and
selfishly.
Really fun, interesting topics.
Yes. I literally got to ask one of my favorite authors of a mental health book to be on the show, and she said yes. And so I'm already fangirling majorly.
I just started reading her book. And
we'll let you all. Well, that'll be a surprise for season 2. We're not going to tell you who she is just yet. You'll find out soon. But thank you so much for tuning in today. We do appreciate you being here. You are making our dream come true. You know, when Christy and I started this podcast, we could have never imagined that so many people would be tuning in. And it's just such a delight to be sharing this with you. So thank you.
Thank you.
That's all for this week's episode.
If this conversation resonated with you, the best way to support us is to follow, rate, and review the show wherever you're listening right now. Are you watching on YouTube? Subscribe and drop us a comment.
Have a friend in mind who could use the advice in this episode? Text them the podcast. You can also connect with us on Instagram at WYTTpodcast. We want to hear from you, so slide into our DMs with your mental health questions. They just might be featured on a future episode.
What Your Therapist Thinks is hosted by me, Christy Plantinga, and Felicia Keller Boyle. This show is brought to you by besttherapist.com, a therapist directory that vets therapists so you can focus on fit, not quality. You can find your best therapist at besttherapist.com.
Our show is produced by the team at Podvision.
See you next time.